God don't give you years to waste, otherwise you wouldn't have them. So this idea is YOLO, you only live once, and like, yeah, keep doing that. And when you're 50 and Social Security is ran out and all that stuff, it's like you're gonna start looking back and you're like, damn, I wish someone told me. So don't waste your younger years.
My name is Detavio Samuels, and welcome to The Black Print, where I sit with the innovators, disruptors, and change makers. My guests open up about every step of their journey and share lessons learned along the way to provide creators, entrepreneurs, and executives with a tangible blueprint for navigating to the top of their industry. This is The Black Print. Welcome to The Black Print. Here we talk to the ceiling breakers, the innovators, the disruptors, those who have overcome life's challenges and obstacles to make it to the top. As I say in every episode, everybody sees you on the mountaintop, nobody sees you on the climb. This is the show where we talk to people about the climb. Today, I'm so happy to have my brother, King Da Vinci. Good to see you, man.
I appreciate you for having me, man. Appreciate that.
Glad to have you, man. Look, we start off every episode, not with my voice, but your voice. Usually when you come onto a show, the host will introduce you, but at Revolt, we believe that we should control our own narratives. And so for me, I would like to start by you introducing yourself to the audience. Who is Da Vinci from his own words, through his own perspective, through his own lens?
I think Da Vinci is the offspring of millions and millions of human beings that had unique experiences that brought him here today. And he's just experiencing life based off of a few men's ideology. And I'm just learning how to play this game based off of that. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I love it. I love it. The reason we do it this way is because I didn't want to come out and say you're a musician, you're an actor. I wanted your truth. So thank you for starting us with your truth. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. Tell me a little bit about life for you as a kid. Where were you born, raised? Tell me a little bit about your upbringing.
So I was born in Brooklyn, New York. My parents were divorced. I was the baby in the family, and my father started a second family and he had more kids. So then I wasn't the baby, but on my mom's side, I'm the baby. And I grew up in poverty, a very normal situation that most of us grow up in. But of course, while you're in it, you don't really know it because everyone else is like that around it until you switch environments and then you start realizing the depths of the lack that you were in. And yeah, that was the beginning. I'm first generation Haitian American. My grandmother did most of the raising and upbringing, and she didn't speak English at all. So while my mother was busy at work, she would raise us. So it was very easy for us to outsmart her in a land that we know more than she does. So, but that doesn't take away from her wisdom that she learned from Haiti, because she definitely had some innate knowledge that, you know, we had no clue about, but we definitely ran circles around her and were able to do whatever we wanted for the most part.
So you talk a little bit about growing up in New York and being raised in poverty. And unfortunately, to your point, that is a story that so many of us do know. But first, I want to kind of jump in and help people dimensionalize. When you say you grew up in poverty, can you kind of describe, like double click into that for me and describe a little bit more of what your environment was like? And then I want to talk about the impact of that environment on you.
So the poverty that I faced was, you know, you don't have all the meals throughout the day. We heavily relied on school lunch. And my mother, she was, you know, making ends meet with a salary that was in the 30,000s a year. So with that, you don't have access to a lot of stuff. When I wanted to play football, the summer camp thing was like $25. I couldn't afford that. It's like, they were like, no, you don't. My mother would always say, I don't have. And what she would have money for would probably just be like the bills and certain things that is a necessity. But any extracurricular things that we needed, we didn't get. They just made sure that they met the very basic needs of survival of the child, which is very dangerous because that type of poverty is like your emotional needs as a child is not being met. So it starts to create a monster within. But, you know, so you gravitated towards the streets. Everything that I had from a certain age up, you know, it was definitely ill-gotten gains from myself and my brothers and whatever. But, you know, we was in public school. That's a place where, you know, it's kids raising other kids. So when you're getting picked on, and that's a real problem because what you got on, because of your haircut or whatever, it's like, yo, like, I need to do something about this. Because we would fight a lot and then just be like, yo, we just got to fit in. So we need the money. Ma don't want to give it to us. So we're going to figure this out.
In the beginning, you kind of said, in one sense, that that it was normalized because the people around you all kind of came from lack.
Right.
But in this other sense, it kind of sounds like it weighed on you, right? You said it created a monster within.
Yeah.
Can you kind of think about or kind of help me understand your mentality as a young man growing up? And what were your dreams? Like, what were your dreams in middle school? What were your dreams in high school? Was it about making it out or are you dreaming of other things?
My dreams in middle school.
High school.
In high school, I think it probably was like, in middle school, no, that's what I was like. I was bad as hell. I was up north, so it wasn't a dream. It was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I probably just wanted, I don't know, be like great at selling drugs. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what you were seeing, you know, around you or whatever. But in high school, I think my dreams would probably been like, because that's when I moved to Florida. So I was getting in trouble a lot. And then so my father took me and my other brother. We were the two youngest, and we started living there. And so when I got in trouble, I was like a juvenile detention center thing for dealing in stolen property and a whole bunch of BS. But when I moved to Florida, I was able to see like a real side to life that I never, and not that is a real side to life, a different side to life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then that's what started making me realize like, oh my God, we didn't have nothing. Like I remember going to like, this is a true story. One time I was at my friend's house and he was like, bro, can you grab these chips from the pantry? I was like, the pantry? And me and my brother looked at each other. We was like, what is it? I mean, we also speak a different language. English is not our first language. So, but we never used that word in our language either. So, but we was like, what is it like? And then we opened it. We was like, oh, niggas got a whole snack cabinet with just snacks and all
a
everything.
Closet full of snacks.
Right? We were like, bruh. And it was just so many little things that we was like, yo, we didn't even know like this is a possibility. And as you starting to look at that and then you kind of look back, you was like, yo, we didn't have anything. And then from there, you know, it's like you realize there was a monster being built inside of you. And it's that critical moment right there that you either rectify that and start fixing that. Because the reason why we were so bad, and I mean, Benjamin Franklin said it best. He said, poverty is the mother of all crime. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we were doing it to be cool. We just didn't know anything. We didn't know any better, you know? So, but being in that better environment, going to predominantly white high school, it changed everything. And it made me realize where I come from. And it made me be like, you know what? I'm going to take the proverbial route. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then I end up not doing it.
Okay.
I did go to school though. I got a degree in criminal justice, but I was like, nah, I'm not going to do this.
So one of my favorite quotes is, exposure to the next level breeds an intolerance for your current situation. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear when I hear you talking about when I came from a system of lack in New York and got exposed to new things. Now, all of a sudden, I'm intolerant to living a life of lack. Right.
Yeah.
My upbringing is relatively similar. Right. So grew up single parent home, mother, probably like, again, same middle school. Like I'm stealing. I'm doing all of those things. Right. Stealing, fighting, et cetera. And then I get moved to the suburbs. And all of a sudden, my neighbors are lawyers and doctors and businessmen. Now, all of a sudden, I'm not having to worry about watching my back when I walk to school, right? And so you get all of this capacity back, right?
Yep.
So you have new capacity, you have new dreams. As you start to switch from what you're saying was the monster that was being built from inside into whatever this new version of you, how are you feeding that new version of you? How are you inspiring that new version of you? How are you figuring out what the new you wants to be if it's not what you were leaving back behind in New York?
So I started... That's a great question. Wow, that's a really good question. So I wasn't, at first, I wasn't trying to figure out the new me. I was just trying to, I was like, okay, I got to fit into my environment.
New environment.
And Napoleon Hill, one of my favorite authors, he beautifully stated, he said, nature forces upon the minds of men the influences of their environment. So my environment started influencing me heavily. So I was like, yo, you know what? I need to start speaking English differently. I remember one time I was in school, I was talking to it was like few black people in the school. So I was talking to one of the only other only black people in the school. And we were talking about like lifting weights or whatever. Cause we were playing football. And I was like, man, shut up, nigga. You weak as hell. And she was like, you weak? It's your YOU'RE. And I was just like,
hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah. Or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about? Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Bitch! Like, I was just like, what the fuck? That's how colloquialism, where we're from, right, the vernacular. Right. You like this shit because you listen to our music all the time. Right. You and your mom, I'm sure, right? But it was this white girl,
so you and your mom.
Blind, blue-eyed, that just speaks so proper, right? But then she was coming for me, and I was mad as hell because like everyone in the class was like kikiing and shit, and I was just like, all right, it wasn't even that funny, one. And two, I'm just like, okay, bet. So I was like, noted. So they judge my intelligence based off of how I speak. I was like, okay, so I got to start changing it up. And I was like, I can speak like y'all if I want to. I speak multiple languages. Y'all don't. Y'all limited to one language that has been de-emphasized. And it's just like, you don't even speak a good language. Like, it's like your language is lame as hell.
Oh, I love it.
Right? So I took it personal, right? And I went home, I told my dad. My dad is like, yeah, whatever. It just don't pay attention to that, whatever. But I remember like that moment. And obviously, when you get embarrassed as a kid, you're just like, damn, it stick with you.
Yeah.
And then I just started changing from there. Then I started reading more because I never picked up a book ever in my life. So like, read for what? Like, it's just not fun. And like, all the books that they make you read in school, it's not books that is very like encouraging to a child. So I started actually reading self-help books like my senior year. And I started going through those things. And I was like, and through reading that, I remember I read something. I was like, they said, if you want to hide something from a black man, put it in a book.
Put it in a book, absolutely.
So I just kept reading. And as I was reading, I was just like, whoa, like all these things is making me a better man, a better person. So that's what started changing my trajectory. I wanted to be a better human being. And thank God, shout out. And the girl name was Megan. I ain't going to say her last name because I was like, she's still around. Okay. I don't know her anymore. But she sparked that in me, and I started reading, I started educating myself, and then, you know, and I'm studying the Warren Buffetts, the guys that drop out of school and things like that. Not saying that there's anything wrong with school. I think school is a great place. I went to college, I did all that stuff, but Warren Buffett, he said, formal education will make you a living, but self-education will make you a fortune. And I was like, okay, let me listen to this white man. So, boom, taking notes, reading more books. And in doing that, I was just like, a light bulb went off and I was like, okay, I understand. If I had a different access to life, I probably would have never been in entertainment. But because of the cards that I was dealt, so sports, I play sports, very athletic here and there, but I never stuck with sports long enough to be, want to be good. And honestly, no disrespect for people who play sports. I just don't care about it. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm good at sports. I can shoot. I can dunk a ball. I can run really fast. I jump over things. But to me, it's like, It's like for what? Like, I'm just not going to do that. And then I'm going to try to encourage every other kid to do what less than 0% of the population could ever attain. For you know what I'm saying? Yep. I'm not doing that. And I couldn't at that point. I was like, you know what? I'm 17 now in college. I'm like, I could get on and play Division I, do D2, but it's like to make it in the NBA. I'm like, nah. But then I was like, okay, so what else do I have? So I'm looking at my hand. I'm like, I'm great at music and I'm good at acting. I always knew the arts. I started off in life, violin was my first instrument. I played the trumpet, played the drums, I played the piano.
Beautiful.
It's like, I'm currently—
How did you learn how to do all of that?
In school, so in elementary school.
Really?
Yeah, so elementary school when I was up north, it's like, they was like, hey, you gotta pick something or whatever. And I was just like, oh, I just do the violin. It's like, you kind of had to, but which was great. Because like in learning how to read music, all Absolutely. That stuff, it's very helpful for the mind. So it was good. And then, of course, I stopped doing that when I went through puberty. It was like, yo, sports is it, right? But
no, I got you. But I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions on that because you said a few things.
Right, I was going to.
Yeah, you know, but I love it. I love it. And my apologies for interrupting your flow. A couple of things that you have in there that I just think are phenomenal that I want to pull out for the audience. So one, this interaction with Megan. I think a lot of us have, a lot of times we can run into a Megan. And when we leave that situation, we end up feeling like we are less. What I love that it sounds like you did was you ran into that moment and you didn't allow it to invalidate who you were. In fact, it just made you stronger. Your response was, no, I can speak your language and 3, 4, 5 other languages, right? As opposed to making allowing her to make you feel like you were less than only because you were speaking in a dialect that was not perfect English.
To
right?
them.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. To them, right? The other thing that I love that you keep saying is, I believe at some point in time, you have to take ownership for your own education. I talk about this notion that you have to school yourself.
Absolutely.
And so even while you're in school, you begin to school yourself, right? Finding books. I love that you brought up this notion that they say that the best way to keep things from a Black man is to put it in a book. If you were to recommend 1 to 3 books that you think everybody should read that kind of helped you on your path, what books would those be?
I just recently read a book called Entering Her Vortex by Jamal. He has an interesting name, but if you type in Entering Your Vortex, Her Vortex, you're going to find. I wish that was the first book I read.
Okay.
But that was like, I just read that book probably like 2 months ago.
Okay. Tell me about it. Yeah.
So it's a book that just talks about the divine femininity and the divine masculinity and the roles of men and women. And there is a beautiful dance between the two and a balance that's there. I would say it just talks about masculinity and femininity and not in the way that society is making a lot of people see it. There is a beauty there to where I think there's not one over the other. They're both together. It's really strong. But now what's being pushed, it is kind of chaos and trauma and dysfunction. And it's due to them wanting the family nucleus to not be a thing. But that is arguably one of the most important things in life, and our sole purpose and everything stable most likely comes from that. I'm a needle in a haystack in my family. I'm the one that made it out, but it's only because I saw great representations of families who adopted me. So I was like adopted, not legally, but basically from two different families. One was a white family, and she's like my white mother, Devane, and her husband, John. Shout out to them. I love them. They showed me a different side of life. And then my grandpa and grandma, who weren't biological, they took me in, but they had this union. And through them, through seeing structure, is part of what saved my life. So I think that that book is very powerful because the way it talks about the two roles, it talks about it with the beautiful dynamic that it should be and not what's being portrayed by a lot of the media outlets.
Yeah, no, look, I'm a big believer in both masculine and feminine energy. I'm a big believer that you need both in a unit, right? And that there is, like you said, there's beauty and there's a beautiful dance as those two things try to figure each other
Absolutely.
Out. So I'm with you on all of that. Okay, any other books that you think people should pick up
the
and read?
The Alchemist.
Oh, The Alchemist is like, that's like one of my favorite go-to. Yeah. You got a favorite quote from The Alchemist?
When something is really for you, the entire universe conspires to help you achieve that goal. Yeah.
I love that book.
Yeah, okay. Jen Sincero, You're a Badass, How to Stop Doubting Your Greatness. Okay. I think that was a perfect book to just understanding life or in layman's terms, and probably The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Waddles. Mm-hmm. That was a really good book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so let's go back into your story. So you're in this place where you are looking at the hand that you've been dealt.
Yeah.
You are reading, pouring knowledge into yourself, and it sounds like you start to say, all right, there's something with music and something with acting, right? So I believe music is the first thing that you kind of jump into. Okay, so tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, so I was just like, all right, so I started having big plans and ideas when I was starting reading all these books, and I was like, oh my God, like light bulb went off. I was like, yo, I think I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do that. And then I actually took acting as an elective in college because you had to take a speech class. And I was just like, okay, sure, I'm going to do acting. And I remember an exam day, it was a scene, it was supposed to be me and this girl. And the girl, she didn't come that day. So I had to perform the entire scene by myself as the teacher read on the stage. And like the teacher was over there and I'm like performing in front of everyone. had the audience dying in tears. And my teacher was like, kid, I don't know what you want to do. I don't know if you want to stick to basketball or whatever, but I would pursue acting because you're very natural at it. I was like, thank you, Mr. O'Brien, but never going to do this. Like, come on, I'm in the middle of nowhere in Florida right now. But as I started thinking, my brain started going to work. I was just like, okay, so in order for me to do what I really want to do, I need a lot of money. I don't have any money. I don't know no one with money. So I'm just like, all right. I was like, so I got to hit the arts. I was just like, so I know how to play music. I know how to act. I come from a lot of experiences that I know how to get to certain real places and emotional places that I don't got to feign affection. I don't got to fake things. I don't got to be cynical or nothing. But I come from like the university of life. Like that taught me everything. Where I come from, it's like, I know how to do so much. It is actually scary. Like I cut my own hair. Even on sets, they'd be like, you're not going to let us? I'm like, no, I'm cutting my own hair. Okay. And they're just like, what? And I'm like, yes. And then I've been doing this since I was like 11. But it's so many things I know how to do. So I was like, okay, bet, I'm going to do this. And I moved back up north. I stopped doing school. And my aunt slash godmother, she was like, hey, I know Jay-Z's mother. She has this place. Shout out to Gloria Carter. She has this place in Newark called Diamonds in the Rough. Every Thursday, a lot of artists come and perform, and there'll be different managers there, a whole bunch of people come, or whatever, whatever. You could, you know, do something. You never know. And I was like, really? What? Let me go. So I wrote a song, went there, and I was writing poetry and different things at the time. And I performed it, and I performed it again another week, and again another week. And then they was like, whoa, like, you're like, yeah, really talented, and da-da-da-da, whatever, whatever. And I got discovered from there. And then
when you say you wrote a song, what type of song? You singing, rapping?
One was a
rap
song, okay. And the other one was, it was poetry. Like, I just did spoken words, and the spoken words, like, got everyone. Like, everyone like, oh, my God, like, wow, this kid, da-da-da. And then from there, I got a manager, and then everything just slowly started connecting. But it was rough. It didn't happen smooth. That part was rough. Like, there was a lot of moments where I was just like, I'm in over my head. I was like, this is not going to work. And I was just like, I'm bugging. But I was so deep into it that I was like, I can't go back. There's no way I can go back. So I was just like, I just have to keep going. Like, I burned all the ships, burned the bridges. There's no way I can go back. And I put myself in a position to where it's just like, I'm either going to reach it or I'm going to die. And I would rather die than live the life that I was living.
Love that, man. Yeah, I love all of that. So you push through because you said you're going to burn all the ships. You're either going to make it or you're going to die.
Yeah.
What's the first big thing that happens next that makes you feel like, all right, we got real momentum, this thing is cooking?
I met my first legitimate manager. I knew Little Mama. Shout out to Little Mama. That's my sister. I love her. Lip Gloss is popping, Lip Gloss
is
cool.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, she was the one that was like, hey, come to LA. You should meet my manager. Like, you're really talented, da-da-da, whatever, whatever. And I was like, man, I've never been to LA before. Like, what? Like, what are you talking about? She's like, just come. And I came. And the manager was like, she was like, hey, you got any headshots? I was like, nope. He's like, you got any this? Nope. Any credit? Nope. I was like, nothing. And she was like, wait, so what do you? I was like, music. I was like, you know. And she was like, okay, can you do it? I was like, well, I write spoken words and whatever. Like, so then I did something. She was just like, wow, it's really good. And she was just like, oh my God. And then she was like, wait, let's set you up with some headshots and let's do this and that, da, da, da. And she was like, you know, you have a good build and size, like we could do something here. And then she signed me and she was like, we're gonna have to find an agency. But she was like, I've been in this for a long time and tell you, because you don't have nothing on your resume or nothing like this, so it's probably gonna be hard, but just work with me. I'll be able to get you auditions and da da da, whatever, whatever. Got a meeting with the agency. CESD was my first agency, and they signed me like that. And she was actually shocked. And then 2 weeks later, I booked my first job. And I remember coming, I was in the Bronx, and I'm coming back from the gym, and like I was just staying with one of my boys, and I was helping him out one of his businesses, just hustling. And I get a call from the manager, and she's like, yo, you booked the job. I was like, a what? She was like, you booked the job. I was like, what do you mean I booked the job? Like, it took me a while to actually process that I was going to be filming something.
Oh, this is on the acting side.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, like what? This is actually like crazy. And then My first day, the star of the show, Kristen Ritter, she gave me some great words of encouragement. And she was like, "I there's something that I think you're going to be in this for a long time."
Okay. And then, I'm going to pull back a little bit and then we're going to jump into that. So one, for the people listening, you made a distinction. You said, "I got a real manager." For those people who are out there trying to find their way in their path, what are ways that you can kind of identify or know whether you have a real manager or whatever you had before, which sounds like something less than? I'm not saying you got to talk about your old manager. How do people know the difference?
That is a great question. That is a really great question. You're really good at what you do. you're really good at making sure that people understand. No, we need that, man. We need that.
I appreciate it.
And the difference is one manager.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify has made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us." Chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/blackprint, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/blackprint.
He was figuring the shit out at the same time I was figuring it out. You know what I'm saying? But acting like he knew way more than me. And I'm just like, hold on, like, what's going on here, you know? And there's a lot of characters in this business. There's a lot of people that go against protocol. There's a lot of people that don't follow the rules, and to where if your gut is telling you something is wrong, it's probably wrong. But at the same time, it's you know what? I should have never said a real manager versus a, I guess the opposing would be a fake manager, because both were managers. It's just one was so unorthodox and so not professional that if anyone is, if I'm explaining this story to anyone in the business, they'll be like, "Yo, kid, you were getting tricked and manipulated." But at the same time, I saw God's hand in that. And what was meant for evil, God made it good. So to me, it's like they both served a great purpose, but he was just managing me and letting me know like the bullshit in the business, not realizing that that was his purpose in my life. And then the lady, she was just like, it was straight work. Okay, we're going to get you a job. Like, she actually had all the connections and stuff.
Yeah.
But the other one was just someone that was just really just talking out his ass.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, okay, something's off here.
Yeah. So, there's a couple of things in there. You talk about this notion of, one, trusting your gut, trusting your intuition, right? If it smells off, like, it could be off. You got to learn. We got to learn to trust our gut and trust our intuition. You also have this notion of, like, for me, it's like this notion of hiring experts. Right? Like, you're not an agent. That's not what you do. You want to hire someone who's already an expert and knows how to do it. So you're like, one difference was, one, I went in, they got headshots. They knew all the next steps. They already had they were already an expert in what they were doing, right? The other person was maybe trying to figure it out along the way with you. So trusting our intuition, finding and hiring experts who can legitimately day one prove to us that they know the next steps for us to be taking, right?
And as crazy as this might sound, anyone who's watching this, I would definitely say, make sure whoever you're working with, there's some type of collateral. Because there's some characters that don't have a car, don't have a home, don't have anything. And they're just selling you a story. And if you don't see behind that, you could you could be in some shit. Like, there's a lot of people that I know in his business, because there's levels to it, right? Just like there's levels in sports. You can play JUCO, D3, D2, D1, and then you go to the G League. That's not the NBA either. You go overseas. That's not the NBA. Y'all look like the NBA players, both just as tall and black, but it's just like, nah, the NBA is NBA. One thing. And all this other thing, yeah, they could be big, tall, and depth, but that's not, and it's very hard to spot that out. It's very hard to spot out because they all look alike.
I love that. Okay, so the other thing you're talking about is you've now already booked your first acting gig. So my question is, what happened to the music along the way, right? So I heard Jay-Z, Gloria Carter, right? That's starting, like, what happens to music before we get into the acting thing?
I love music. Music is my first love. That is my passion. But the industry made me hate music because it's not what you want to do, it's what sells. And I was just like, I can't go to sleep at night knowing that I'm portraying a lifestyle that I know that this is not what got me here. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in this lifestyle, and this lifestyle have destroyed my brothers, destroyed my cousins, and literally I've seen a lot of people die because of this lifestyle that they want me to perpetuate. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, no. And then when you don't die, you're so traumatized, and then you start self-medicating, so you start destroying your brain and you become a fiend. And your brain's capacity is like 1%. You can't do nothing. Your cognitive skills is gone. Everything is just gone. Then you develop paranoia. You develop some type of psychosis. And then also prison. Prison is, if you don't die, you could most likely go into prison, right? Yeah. That's our fate. So I was just like, there's no way I'm going to perpetuate that. Mm. Like, it's just like, I just can't.
How big of a decision was that for you? I think, you know, there's so many young black kids that grow up wanting to be hip hop artists, rappers. There's definitely, you know, all of hip hop isn't gangster and terrible. But to your point, the industry might be pushing people in that way. And I think there's a lot of people who would have taken that journey with them, right? The fame, the desire to be a rap. Like, how hard was it to you to make a decision that sounds like it was rooted in purpose, rooted in your values, rooted in your beliefs? How hard was it to walk away from something that looked like it might be a potential win for you, and instead kind of like stand 10 toes down on your values?
That specifically wasn't hard because of how annoying it was to go to the studio and deal with these people. God made it easy for me. God made that very easy for me. You know, sometimes I think about, dang, what it would have been like if I would have continued doing it. But honestly, the way musicians make most of their money is on the road. I like stability. I like consistency. So if I have to go on tour and do this and that, it just affects you. We're human beings, we're creatures of habits. We need some type of steady system to be healthy. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to work out and have the best body in the world, like, you got to have a certain sleep schedule. You got to eat at a certain time. You got to do this at a certain time. But like, when you're changing your altitudes and the weathers and this and that, you're eating all type of foods, you're on the go, and then everyone's in the studio all the time drinking. It's just like, this is not good for you. So to me, I was just like, you know what, God, I'm fine. I would rather do a project. I'm filming for 6 months, film for 5 months. I'm in one location. And when I have a wife and kids, we all could be in that location, whatever we do. So it was more stable. Anyway, so I was just like, you know, in the music environment, been in studios, man. I've been in shootouts. I've been in this. And it's just like, it's not, I just don't think it's conducive to a healthy lifestyle. No shade to none of my peers that's in it. It's just kudos to y'all, but they're in war. That's why a majority of them are under the influences, but I, all the time, and I fight my wars sober. So when I'm going through something, I'm sober. And it's just like, I can't deal with that. Like, it's like, kudos to all the musicians in the world and out there, because it's sad. It's very sad. Not even gonna lie to anyone out here. It's tough.
So not hard for you to stand 10 toes down, and you book your first gig. What show was the first gig?
Marvel Jessica Jones.
Okay. And what was that like being on set? Like, was, real set for the first time.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was like, yo, there's a lot of cameras in my face right now. And how many times are we gonna do this damn scene? Like, I was like, yo, this is crazy. You gotta do this angle, same thing, this angle, same thing, this angle, same thing, cover. I was like, yo, this is a lot. But then I was like, all right, like, this is what I asked for. And I was like, okay. But I didn't really get a feel for it then. I got a feel for it when I was filming Grown-ish, my second project. And I was just like, yo, like, okay, like, this is, you know, whoa, this is different, you know? And yeah.
When you book Grown-ish, do you feel like you've made it? Like, are you like, I'm here, I've arrived?
Nah,
okay.
I did.
Okay.
But I think is when Grown-ish came out. When I was like, I remember the first week, like, my character was trending worldwide on Twitter.
What was that like?
And that was crazy. I was just like, whoa, like, what? Like, I'm like trending. And then it was crazy because I was like, whoa, this is how the world receives me. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never been seen on a platform so large before. And so to me, I was like, okay, maybe I got this. Like, maybe I can do this. And then next project hit. And then every project I was doing, like, I was just like, yo, I feel like an artist that is like featuring on records, getting hits and hits and hits. And then, you know, and then now BMF come along.
Yeah,
and
man.
I feel like that's the album, because that's the project that I'm like stuck in.
Yeah.
Not stuck, but that's my
rooted project
in. And I'm like, okay, first album was platinum, second one's platinum, third one's platinum. And now we're filming the fourth one. So it's just like, I'm like, so now I kind of feel like, okay, I think I'm in the business now. Like, I'm like 6-7 years later. Now I can really say, when someone asks me what I do, I can probably say that. I still won't, because I don't like that question. But now I finally feel like, okay, like, I'm in the game now. I don't feel, I'm a rookie still, but I feel like I'm a rookie that's kind of doing it.
I want to ask a question that has to, so you're the one that made it. I think you said you were the one out of your family, out of the all of the kids and all the siblings that made it. What is the interaction with home like? You know, a lot of times we make it to a certain level and then we still have our family. Does family come with us? Do we go back with family? Like, what does that kind of look like in your world?
How to say this? Everything was better when it was a figment of my imagination. It has caused a lot of disruption.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
I keep a healthy distance from home and the people that I grew up with, you know? And oftentimes, when you beat the odds and make it in a situation that no one else is programmed to understand it, you look crazy. Or it look like you're doing something illegal. Or it looks like, it's hard to grasp when somebody had almost the same exact experience as you and they make it out. And because sometimes you're a reflection for everybody's insecurities, so they can't help to have a disdain for you at moments. And sometimes it comes out and it's just a matter of when it comes out. So yeah, that's what I would say.
In that situation, I think then what really matters is the circle that you then build around you. So maybe tell me a little bit about who's in your circle today. Like, who keeps your mind right? You know, they say eagles all soar, right? Who are the eagles that you're soaring with? You by yourself? You stick to yourself? Okay.
I would be missed if I said I didn't have a good circle. I have a good circle, but the things that is the closest to me in my life, I value it so much that I would rather not say who they are.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
I have a good group of people. And the people that I work with, my team, from my manager, agents, stylist, videographer, security, like we all genuinely care for each other to where it's just like, it's deeper than the work. And I think in that, you know, there's a level of peace that comes from that. And, you know, and I have people in my personal life that have nothing to do with the business side of Da Vinci, and it's great. One's blood.
No one's what?
No one's blood.
Yeah. And for me, the names are less important. For me, it's more important to me, for the audience to understand the importance of your circle and the people you keep around you and how you've chosen who you have allowed to be around you.
Right.
Do you think you were intentional and deliberate around building this circle that you have?
Yeah, I was for sure intentional and deliberate. But sometimes my emotions got the best of me with building my circle because I really wanted it to, some people from my upbringing to be there. And not everyone is built for that. You know, a lot of people are rigid in their thinking. And I've never understood the saying more than ever now. You could lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And it's just like, there are some human beings that they're so rigid in their thinking that you can know what's better for them. And if they don't want that for themselves, or if they don't know, there is nothing you can do for them. And I think it's one of the saddest things about being in this position in life. And Harriet Tubman, some believe that she said that, I freed 1,000 slaves, but I could have freed 1,000 more only if they knew they were slaves. And where I come from is like a lot of people don't want to admit certain things. They're in denial. They just don't want to become better, and they're not solution oriented mentally because they've been crippled by their environment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
let's get into that exactly. So you are at the top. BMF is crushing, right? You guys just got some big victory, right? Did you just get a big, tell me what the big win was recently?
We're the highest rated show on the network.
Congratulations.
The Power Boys. Y'all didn't beat us this season for sure.
Y'all got the title. Congratulations,
yeah, we got the title,
man.
For sure, for like all of the shows. And again, all of the shows, Power. And in season four, we're starting to film season four. We got picked up. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
you. One of the things that you're doing with this platform that you have is making space in the mental health arena. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing in the mental health space and how you kind of got onto that path.
So there was always a prayer that I would tell myself that if I ever make it out, God, like it's going to be worth it. You're going to be like, you know what? I'm glad I gave this kid a shot because I'm not going to let him down. So I feel obliged to extend the ladder and help the community that I came from and who's arguably suffers the most in the world. And so I feel like the success that I've been able to acquire in a few years, I can't go to sleep at night peacefully knowing that a lot of people don't have the access to what I had and what I was doing with my life. So I started, you know, being a strong advocate for mental health because I was like, I don't want these people to think I made it here by just luck, or he was just snapped from whatever, or he knew someone and that's what happened. It's like, no, I've spent hours and years, over a decade now, working on myself. At 17, from 17 to 27, every day, or probably 95% of all those days within that 10 years, I would wake up, listen to something positive. I would meditate. I would read my affirmations, read my mantras, go to sleep, same thing. And I'm reading a new book and I'm learning. I stopped listening to rap music at one point because I was just like, I was trying to guard my mind because I understood when I started understanding psychology, because I studied criminal justice in college due to the fact that I was like, yeah, the black people, we get affected by the system the most. So let me understand what's going on in this system. So in doing that, you got to understand behavioral psychology, and because you're dealing with criminals, you got to study behavior. But as I was studying this stuff, I later further took the studies in on my own. And I realized it's like whatever you're doing at any given moment, you're physically modifying yourself to become better at it. So what that means is if you don't delete social media and not have, like, I didn't have social media for a minute. I created social media when Grownish came out. So I didn't have it. And I'm in this generation, like in the heart of it, in the core of it. But I didn't have it because I realized that what I said about physically modifying your brain to become better at something, if you're watching videos and looking at images that has nothing to do with the next thing. So one could be an elephant. One could be two girls fighting. One could be, oh, TMZ, this person did da-da-da-da-da. One could be a gospel lyric. One could be this shoes and whatever, whatever. You're training your brain to have ADHD. Your brain, there's a comedian there that's like, all right, he doesn't want to pay attention for anything longer than X amount of seconds. So guys, let's be great at that. So your brain is literally giving you what you want.
Yeah.
And this is why you have a generation of everybody with short attention spans.
Yeah.
And I realized in order to do anything in life, in order to really plan methodically, take calculated risks and do anything, is like you need to have a longevity in your thinking. Nothing just happens in a day, 2 days, not even a year, 2 years, 3 years. And when something happened in 10, 15 years, that's an overnight success.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, so I realized certain things like that. And I was just like, okay, and what I'm feeding my mind is like, I can't constantly keep hearing somebody talking to me saying, you, they got more money than me. They're going to take my bitch. And if I look at them wrong, their security's going to kill me. I'm like, damn, this is kind of crazy. And we're paying good money to go to these concerts saying that you're going to take the girl that I'm with. Like, what the fuck? And like, she's looking at you. And I'm like, damn, babe, are you really looking at this nigga right now? Like, yeah, I got changed too, you know, but it's crazy. So I was like, yo, I can't listen to that no more. So I literally put myself in my own rehab. Not for drugs, but because of the other influences in my environment. And that made me a better man. And in doing that, you know, my vision was clear. I think it's very foggy outside right now. There's a lot of distractions. And in order for you to see clearly, you need to start cutting those distractions off. And so because of what I did, I feel obliged to pass that forward. You know, I know there's a lot of people in my shoes and in worse conditions and better conditions or whatever, but even the ones that comes from better financial homes than me, but they're still in that distraction pit, you know, with the TikToks and the Instagrams and all that stuff. So my job is, I'm not trying to sit here and change the world. I ain't gonna do that. I ain't big enough to do that. But I'm just trying to spark someone and help people. I remember my English teacher in high school, he told us a story about this boy and a starfish. I don't know if you ever heard the story?
It sounds familiar, but tell it again just
so,
in case.
So basically, sure. It was like, one day, a whole bunch of starfish washed ashore. And it was like thousands, thousands, thousands on the beach. And then this little boy was like picking the starfish up. And he was throwing it back in the water. He's picking it up, throwing it back in the water. And then this old grumpy man was like, kid, what the hell are you doing? He's like, I'm putting the starfish back in the water so they can swim and have a good time because some of them look like they're stuck. And then the old man is like, yo, what are you doing? Like, you're never going to be able to do all this stuff. Your little arms are going to get tired. You're going to get weak. You're going to give in. You're probably going to die before you do it. You're never going to make a difference. And then he picked one up, looked at the old man, threw it in the water and said, I just made a difference in that one's life. So I look at that and I'm like, you know what? This is why I got to do that. Cause I was one of those starfish that I read a book that some man who had way more success than I could have ever even fathomed was like, I know someone's going to read that. And that changed my life. I didn't have physical access to anyone that was doing well in life, but I was able to have YouTube. I was able to read books. I was able to listen to a whole bunch of podcasts and different things of people doing that. So it helped and it worked for me. And now my parents are retired. Now, you know, so to me, I'm just like, thank you so much. So I'm like, yo, it works. So I could affect someone else and help them. So that's why I take it very serious. Every year when I finish filming, I hit about 10, 15 cities, probably going to do more because mental health has become a matter of national security, is a national crisis. And the Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, he reached out to me to hit the Hampton University with him. And I did that to talk about the crisis that's going on and how to alleviate some of that suffering that's going on. And one of the biggest problems is that in this generation, we're exposed to too much of basically the side effects of this modern world, right? All this social media and all this entertainment and all this confusion. Our brains is biologically wired to be more like a caveman than it is to deal with this. So when you're putting all these things in the person's brain, that we have not evolved at the rate that technology had evolved at. So that's what's making us depressed. That's what's making us have a lot of anxiety. So I'm trying to tell a lot of people to just step back. Less is more. Simplicity is key. So that's really where I attack the entire thing from.
Yeah, I want to talk about some more of the things you're doing to optimize, but I totally relate with this. Me and one of my boys, we always have this conversation. That's like the human brain wasn't designed to go from, as you're scrolling, happiness to rage to frustration to in 10 seconds, right? The human brain isn't made for any of that, right?
That's
but we all do it for hours and hours every single day, right? So one of the things that you've done is you've put a good handle on your social media consumption. What are some of the other things that you do to optimize yourself? I wake up every day doing the same thing. I'm just trying to figure out the machine God gave me and how do I make it perform at its best? So what are some of the other things that you do in order to optimize the machine that you have?
I'm very cautious with the entertainment that I take in. So like I'm the type of person to where if me and my boys were all in the car, we're all chilling, and they're like, yo, bro, I just seen some wild shit. Keep it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Hey, bro, let me show you. Keep it to yourself. Oh, you need to know what's going on in the world. No, I don't. Mm-hmm. Like, I know there's a lot of terrible shit that's going on right now, and I limit that. Mm-hmm. You know, at this certain movie, like, for example, yo, this is a really good movie. Really? What is it about? No, I'm cool. I don't want to watch it. Like, why? Like, it's only gonna make me wake up that monster that I worked so hard to, you know, keep aside. Yeah. So I meditate.
Brilliant.
A lot. Meditation is key. When you meditate, you improve the cortex, the neocortex, the new brain, to call it, and you kind of quiet down the amygdala, that limbic system, that little
lizard
animal brain.
Yeah.
The lizard, exactly. And you shrink that and you enlarge the other one, and it just gives you better focus. It gives you peace. It allows you to finally just breathe and try not to think about anything. I read a lot. I'm always finding a new book to get my hands on. Or if I can't read it right now because I'm so busy going to sit doing whatever, the audio book. And I limit the type of music that I'm exposed to. It has a lot to do. Auto suggestion and repetition is a real thing. The more you listen to something, the more you become. In the beginning was the word. Life or death lies on the tongue. I think a lot of people are not aware of how powerful their tongue is.
Absolutely.
And because they're so desensitized and distracted, they say a lot of bullshit with their mouth.
Yeah.
To where they don't realize it's like, yo, dude, you're
speaking it into existence.
Yeah, exactly. That is just so real. I'm cautious on what I eat. I'm cautious on who I spend quality time with. I take those things very, very, very serious. You only have one life. And if there's somebody causing you stress and you don't want to be around them, you should get rid of them or just keep a safe distance from them. And I prioritize my peace over everything, over a job, over whatever, because I've been fortunate enough to see a lot of people that I grew up watching that has hundreds of millions of dollars, unhappy. Mm-hmm. Go to their party, go to their event, and I'm just like, whoa, this person is like so under the influence right now. And I'm like, damn. And I'm like, damn, I can't even get a picture because I don't want to ask them why they're in this state. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, damn. So to me, I'd rather make $200,000 a year at peace than $200 billion a year and just miserable as hell. So I prioritize my peace.
Yeah, I love that. Same. Two tactical questions. What do you do for sleep? What's your sleep routine look like?
I sleep well.
You sleep well? Okay,
I don't have a problem sleeping. Thank God. Like, sleep is my drug. When I don't have sleep, I'm grumpy as hell. Like, today, if I have sleep, I'm not coming here.
Oh, different human? Okay.
I'm not coming here, like, at all. Like, but when I have sleep, I'm good. So I usually take naps during the day, for sure. Like, you know, after 18 years old, them naps came in. You know? Like, the 20-minute, 25-minute nap. And that's a real nap. By the way, some people be taking 2 hours.
Two-hour naps.
You went to sleep. That's not a nap. Like, a nap is actually like 20, 25 minutes cap, and it really rejuvenates me. But I have a good sleep schedule and sleep routine. When I'm doing night shoots, is affected.
Sure.
I'm disturbed by it, but my body can adjust.
Yeah. Last one is like nootropics or supplements. You do anything for your brain to help with memory, to help with
food?
What was it?
Food.
What's your diet like?
Eat the right food. I think eat more greens.
Greens are like the best thing you can eat, period.
Water. Water. Mm-hmm. Your body is made up of like 2/3 water. Yeah. So if you drink a lot of water, you get a lot of oxygen outside, you hang around good people, you try to sleep. If you can't sleep, then maybe take a supplement to help you sleep. Eat greens or get your greens in the IV if you can afford it. But what it is. But I'm afraid of supplements unless like you actually need it, because I don't want my body to become dependent on something. Mm-hmm. Because then if it runs out and I don't have it, then I'm like, bro, I can't do this interview.
Right. Like, I need can't this, execute.
You know? Mm-hmm. So yeah.
All good. All right, I'm going to get us out of here, and before I close out, I'm just going to ask you, do you have any final words? You dropped so many gems. Let me just say that I'm grateful for your voice. I'm grateful for your words, for your mind and your genius, and for the words of wisdom that you shared today.
Thank you.
Any like closing words, anything that you want to get off your chest? Any, look, man, we didn't get to this, or I'm sitting on this wisdom that has helped me kind of get to where I am. Any last words that you want to have for the audience?
I would say by the time a human is like 15 years old, that's not a kid. You are smarter than what you actually think you are. In this country, you guys baby the shit out of grown men and women, which is insanity. Like, my parents ain't from this country, but like 8 years old, they can do a lot. Like, their maturity is, and a lot of people overseas, Europeans, is the same way. It is this concept in America that it's like, you guys are telling people that, oh, he's in his 20s, he's a kid. It's like, no, you're not, like, don't, you're giving a person an excuse. So I just want to say, when you're in your teenage years, take that serious. Because everything you do in life and everything you get is a sum total of all your thoughts and your actions. And don't think 30 and 40 is that far away, and 50. Like, it's like, one of the biggest things that I see, and I think it's one of the biggest problems in this world, is that a lot of us think, oh, we're so young, we can just do whatever. Like, people think their 20s is to waste. And I played my cards right in my 20s, and I'm still in my 20s, and now my parents are retired. See what I'm saying? So I'm just like, I wouldn't take, like, God don't give you years to waste, otherwise you wouldn't have them. So this idea is YOLO, you only live once, and like, yeah, keep doing that. And when you're 50 and Social Security is ran out and all that stuff, it's like, you're gonna start looking back and you're like, damn, I wish someone told me. So I definitely wanna tell people who's watching, like, don't waste your younger years. Stop the notion of, I'm so young and I have so much time. You don't know what could happen to you tomorrow. And just take your life serious, because you have generations that's depending on it. So that's all I'll say.
Look, there's no greater mic drop than God don't waste time, right? God, yeah, don't, like, waste years.
Like, we're just going to give you years to just waste?
All right. So, man, like I said, I am just grateful for this conversation. I'm grateful for the opportunity to build with you. I want to celebrate you and the amazing work that you've been doing. Congratulations on the top
show
on the network. That's a massive accomplishment, especially when you get to understand where you came from and all that you've done to overcome and create the man that I get to see standing in front of me right now. So, King, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming to the Black Print.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Man, that conversation with Da Vinci was incredible. You talk about a brother who is focused, is deliberate, is purposeful in all of his work and what he's doing. It's just beautiful to see. What was striking to me, and I said it during our conversation, but this notion of how, you know, one of the biggest things is he takes this pivotal moment of his high school experience, the interaction with the young lady where she belittles him for the way that he talks. And I love how he took that negative moment and turned it into a positive moment. He talks about how he realizes that it's actually her that's limited and not him. She speaks one language and he speaks five. He immediately sees that he has the ability to go between worlds. Okay, if that's what it takes to win in this world, to speak eloquently, then I can do that and get ahead as well. And then last but not least, he says, okay, if the path to winning is elegance and in talking in this way, then I need to start reading and preparing my mind so that I can have the conversations that I need to have. The second thing that I love about Da Vinci is how he's curating the world that he lives in. You know, I think about it when I was younger, before social media and all of these things happened, your world was confined to the zip code that you lived in, right? The neighborhood that you lived in. That's the only noise, essentially, that you had to deal with. Today, because of social media and the internet, we're constantly being thrown into different worlds that can shift your frequency. And what Da Vinci has been really good at doing is making sure that he is curating the world that he wants for himself. He's not listening to music that's gonna send his spirit into the different direction. He's not gonna put food in his body that's gonna act counter to who he wants to be. The man talks about moving, he's sober, he's reading, he's intentional, he's focused, he's meditating, he's doing all of the things to protect and curate the world that he wants for himself. Da Vinci also hits on something that's always gonna be important, especially in our community, when so few of us make it to the quote unquote mountaintops. But he talks about the importance of giving back. He now exists as a mental health advocate, doing what he can to create awareness around mental health issues, doing what he can to make sure that we're having the conversations. Young Black men and young Black women are having the conversations that they need to have around protecting their mental health and the things that they need to do to protect their mental health and make sure that they're healthy and happy. You know, I talked in the beginning about how I love how intentional and deliberate he was. The last thing that I love is just like, this is clearly a man that is moving with purpose. He had lots of different opportunities coming up. He talked about he could have been an athlete. That wasn't in his purpose or in his DNA. He was good at it, but he didn't love it like that. He talked about how he could have been a rapper. He was good at it. People liked him, but it didn't speak to his spirit in terms of the type of music that they wanted him to make. And so this is a man that has been very clear about understanding what puzzle is his to solve. And then once he found it in acting, leaned all the way in. And so love seeing a brother who is operating with values, operating with purpose, regardless of the cost of walking away from things that could have set him up for success. But if it wasn't on purpose, he wasn't willing to take that step back. Just love how intentional and deliberate he is as a man.